You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
He got game! He got game!
NFL Insider, Mike Florio.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It is always a joy and a privilege to talk to Mike Florio. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Mike.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Oh, it's a happy and good time because now we're getting the television ratings in and we're seeing just what we knew watching the game, that nobody really likes the Rams and they don't really have a crowd. And wow, I mean, when you have less of the country, when you have less fans in L.A. than you do around the rest of the country in terms of watching the Super Bowl, that's a blow.
I agree with you. And look, the fact that the game was boring, and I know there's a school of thought out there that no Super Bowl is boring, and it wasn't a blowout. It was in doubt throughout, but it was still, you know, punt, 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 punt. I mean, there's a certain point where you say, what happened to the NFL that we've been watching all year long? But, you know, L.A. is going to take a while to come back to the NFL just because the Rams have been there for 3 years. Just because they make it to one Super Bowl doesn't mean that L.A. is going to rediscover football. And you know, people are sick of seeing the Patriots. So it all kind of added up to 100.7 million watching the game, which is an impressive number still. But I always ask myself when I see those audience figures, well, what the hell else is the rest of the country doing, right? You have 325 million people. Like it's the one day a year when I thought everybody pulled together and got behind one thing, and either you were afraid you were going to miss something or you're interested in the commercials or it's an excuse to go have some beers and hang out with your friends or family on a Sunday night. It's just amazing to me that relative to the overall size of the country, the NFL still has a long way to go to truly saturate the U.S. The way that we just assume it has.
Mike, what element of the game and the way it unfolded surprised you the most?
Well, I think the fact that the Patriots were able to slow down that Rams offense, and also that the Patriots didn't give in to the temptation to try to, you know, push the ball down the field and take some chances. They were willing to play an old school 70s style Super Bowl, and it reminded me of most of the Super Bowls that were played, really from Super Bowl III through Super Bowl XII, with the exception of maybe 10 and one other one. Oh, the Super Bowl V that went to overtime, but it was a kick right at the end that won it. A lot of those games in the 70s were just kind of that slow, methodical suffocation. And even though this game was tied going into the fourth quarter, there was just a sense that the Patriots were going to win it, that the Patriots were going to put the clamps on them, and that the Patriots were going to eventually get that touchdown that created an insurmountable lead. And after seeing the Rams score 54 in week 11, 11 weeks later they get held to 3, just a testament to what the Patriots are able to do. And then to exercise the restraint to not take chances offensively and give Aaron Donald an opening to destroy Tom Brady, I just think it was a brilliant game plan on both sides of the ball, executed perfectly. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the score is. What matters is who's holding the trophy at the end. And here are the Patriots again with number 6.
I was really surprised that Julian Edelman got elected the Hall of Fame by the broadcasters after the game. But
I understand that we overreact to things. But if you're going to put Julian Edelman in the Hall of Fame right now, you're going to need a much bigger Hall of Fame because there's a lot of other busts that are going to go in there of deserving receivers and other players that otherwise aren't in. And I'm not saying he can never get in. Like, if he would win Super Bowl MVP next year, right, or two more years in a row, like, there's still more he can do. If he passes Jerry Rice for postseason receptions or postseason receiving yards, that's a big feather in his cap. But for now, when you're tied for 148 for all-time receptions and at 248 for all-time receiving yards, it's hard to make the argument that you're one of the best of all time. It's hard to even let that argument be teed up, but, you know, it was it was something that was kind of gurgling last week, this idea that Edelman's a fringe Hall of Famer. You throw a Super Bowl MVP on top of it, and people just went nuts with it without bothering to do the research and look at whether or not this guy has the numbers that would even qualify him for consideration, much less induction.
Mike, we discussed this earlier in the program, not necessarily Julian Edelman and the Hall of Fame consideration, but the fact that here he is, Super Bowl MVP, and he's playing in the Super Bowl. Why does the NFL embrace or allow a guy who has served a four-game PED suspension earlier in the year to be part of this or just kind of into the fold, whereas Major League Baseball, they shun their drug cheats?
Well, and look at how we react to the baseball drug cheats. We attach, as a public, a much greater stigma to cheating in baseball mm-hmm. than we do to cheating in football. And I think in football, we look at these guys and we see how big they are. We see how cut they are, how ripped they are. And I think at a certain level, we're like, yeah, there's no way those guys can keep playing week in and week out with some sort of pharmaceutical enhancement. So we don't get freaked out when we find out about it. And also, the NFL rules say, you know, basically, hey, you serve your four-game suspension, and then you're back in the same standing as any other player. That's how the NFL's always done it with PED violations. He got caught. He really didn't have a good explanation for it. He served his four games, and he ends up being the Super Bowl MVP. You know, it's the second time that the Patriots, in their last two Super Bowl wins, had a key player that was suspended for the first four games of the season and then came back and won the Super Bowl MVP award, because it was Brady serving the Deflategate suspension in 2016, and now Edelman serving the four-game PED suspension. And, you know, I would assume that what he did in the 12 regular season games and postseason games was untainted by PEDs, because I assume he's being tested more aggressively. But still, it's part of his story, and it was conveniently overlooked on Sunday.
Interesting to see a couple of assistants get head coaching jobs after the game. Obviously, the Brian Flores thing is, I don't know what to make of it, to be honest with you, Mike. I mean, I thought they had a great defensive game plan and they played great defense. I don't know how much of that he gets credit for. You know, certainly we're here in Chicago and we see Matt Patricia a couple times a year, and he came from New England. And boy, there's a lot of coaches that have come from New England that have really struggled to kind of live up to it. Seems like proximity to Belichick is really a good way of measuring degree of coaching done.
Well, and here's the thing with Flores that makes him so fascinating. He was there for 15 years. He's only 37. He's been in personnel. He was in the scouting department there for several years. He's coached on both sides of the ball. He's really had a chance to have a comprehensive look at everything that goes on in an organization. And he just had that vibe of a head coach where he wants to impact lives. He's demanding. He's going to have a high bar for his players. And the challenge is, I think, and when you look at what Matt Patricia dealt with in Detroit this year, I think it's evidence of what can happen. When you go into an organization that has a history of mediocrity at best, and you're trying to change the culture, you're going to meet a lot of resistance. And how Patricia dealt with it in Detroit wasn't ideal. How Flores deals with it in Miami is going to go a long way toward determining whether he's successful or not. Because from players to support staff to assistant coaches to members of the scouting department to anyone you encounter to the media covering the team, if Flores tries too dramatically to turn this thing around and ruffles feathers in the process, it makes it hard to get to where you want to be unless you win right out of the gates. If you win, that goes a long way toward letting you be what you want to be. But if you go in there with that kind of, you know, that Belichickian mindset and you don't win, you're going to have people who turn on you quickly. And I think Patricia's dealing with that in Detroit. I think Flores would be very wise to study closely what's happened with Patricia and try to work around it.
Mike, in this post-Super Bowl lull, I think the NBA is ready for its close-up. You saw it steal some headlines last week with Anthony Davis and the Knicks' big trade. But if you had to look at the NFL, what's the next big story? What's the next big headline?
Well, you know, the league year opens March 13, and trades can be done tentatively before then. And this Antonio Brown thing is still hanging over the Pittsburgh Steelers, so that's out there. What happens with Nick Foles and the Eagles is going to be a big talking point over the coming days. The Eagles have the device where they can apply a $20 million option for 2019. Foles can then buy out of it. And then will the franchise tag be applied by the Eagles to Foles? The Le'Veon Bell's future is is still up in the air. Apparently the Steelers are thinking about applying the transition tag to him, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but maybe they will. And so those are the things that are coming as we get closer and closer to the start of the league year. And then we've got the scouting combine in 3 weeks. It's time to run 40 yards in a straight line and act like that actually means something to football. You know, it's this alternate reality. And I know I'm not supposed to say it because I'm part of the media that covers football and I'm supposed to be kind of in on it and support this, but we're going to have over the next 2.5 months this entire industry that pops up with the obsession over all these draft picks and the honor of being drafted into an NFL team, and then we're only going to talk about 3 or 4 of them after the draft. It's like the draft never happened. Like the draft ends, like, okay, back to the normal football world, and you throw those guys in the vat with everyone else, but that's going to start ramping up. We're going to be in Indianapolis before we know it, and everybody's going to be hyping up the draft, and then the draft ends. It's like, all right, when's football season start?
What did you hear from Roger Goodell? I mean, last Wednesday he talked, and Roger always kind of says stuff, but I don't know that I really get anything out of it. I couldn't figure out what he was saying about Kareem Hunt, to be brutally honest with you. I wasn't sure. Does the team have to sign him in order for him to suspend him?
He can be suspended. He can be suspended without being signed.
So they're still figuring that one out, though, right? He said they were getting close?
Yeah, I think if I'm Kareem Hunt's agent, I am trying to find a way to get them to make a decision quickly, because the sooner a team knows how long Kareem Hunt's going to miss in 2019, the sooner they can make a reliable decision on whether or not you want to bring him in. Because let's say he gets suspended 6 games. I'm just throwing a number out there. Let's say it's the baseline domestic violence, physical assault, 6-game punishment. Then you know. So you can say, all right, we're going to sign him for the offseason program. We're going to sign him for training camp preseason. He can learn the ropes. He's gone for 6 weeks. Then he comes back and he contributes. If he's suspended for the full year, that changes things. So the sooner they know how long he's going to be out, the better off it's going to be. But I'll tell you, the one thing that really, really resonated with me from the Roger Goodell press conference, it was a subtle point, but it relates to the Colin Kaepernick situation. There was a time in 2017 when Goodell would defend the unemployment of Colin Kaepernick by saying teams do what they have to do to win. That was, hey, you know, they're going to sign guys and they're trying to win, and then the decisions are based solely on trying to win. That shifted when the Ravens openly acknowledged that they had considered non-football factors in not signing Kaepernick. And then Goodell said, hey, teams are going to do what's in their best interest, which is far broader than trying to win, because you got financial interests at play, irrespective of winning. Last week, he went back to teams do what they have to do to win. And that tells me, when he got questioned under oath in the Kaepernick collusion case, they forced him to pick a side. They forced him into either you're trying to win or you're trying to do what's in the best interest of your team. And he picked that horse. And I think picking that horse makes it even more glaring that guys like Josh Johnson are employed in the NFL, and these guys who get phone calls and tryouts and offers, while Kaepernick's phone never even rings with an inquiry, with a question, with a, hey, are you interested in being our backup or our third-string guy or coming in for a workout? It makes it more glaring, and it may have been a tactical error by Goodell to take that position. But that's something to keep an eye on, because that thing's not going anywhere. And at some point in 2019, there's going to be a ruling, and the NFL may be surprised by what it is.
Mike, thanks a ton. We appreciate your
thanks,
time,
Mike.
As always.
Thanks great all season.
Yep. Take care, guys.
That's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.